athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event, then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
I think very deeply.
In about 4 seconds, a teacher will begin to speak.
I think very deeply.
Thank you for joining me on another edition of the program. Joining us today here on Box to Row, Alabama State head men's basketball coach Tony Matlock going to join us on the program. The Hornets are 2-0 on this young SWAC season in terms of SWAC play, and had a thrilling victory on Monday against Arkansas Pine Bluff. And so Tony Matlock, the head men's basketball coach at Alabama State, going to join us on the program. The Hornets going to be on the road on Saturday taking on Jackson State. Look, first and foremost, thoughts and prayers are with those affected by the fires in the Los Angeles area. I mean, that has been the ongoing news. The coverage has been extensive. And I haven't seen anything like this that I can think of before, where it just continues to get worse and you can't do a whole lot about it, at least preliminarily, because of the winds. But man, thoughts and prayers are with those in the Los Angeles area who are going through this very, very tough time. Going to talk some National Football League today here on the program, as I mentioned. And look, had some really good games last week. Look, the Ravens and a lot of the talk is whether who is the MVP, who is the league MVP going into once it's all said and done, who will be the MVP of the National Football League? I think you have pretty much a four-man race in no particular order. Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills, Saquon Barkley of the Philadelphia Eagles. You've got Joe Burrow, Cincinnati Bengals, and you've got Lamar Jackson of the Ravens. And yes, I believe that you can throw Burrow into this conversation. Because look, we know that this is a regular season award, so the awards votes are already in. And the Bengals really had an opportunity to make it to the playoffs. Now, the Bengals did their part, winning their game, but they just didn't have the necessary help they needed. Now, had they gotten off to the better start, then it may have been null and void, because towards the end, I mean, you're talking about a Bengals team that had won 5 straight football games. And you can't ask for much more than that down the stretch. But the Bengals, unfortunately, didn't handle their business early. But I really believe that it's a two-person race, and really a two-quarterback race. I look at Josh Allen and the season that Josh Allen has had and the season that the Buffalo Bills have had. And you can, look, he's thrown for well over 3,000 yards. I think he's got something like 28 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. He's been absolutely fantastic. I think that he probably will win the award, because I do believe in the fatigue. Okay, we've seen Lamar Jackson and what Lamar Jackson has done the last couple of years, and not just the last couple of years, but more than a couple of years, but the 2 years that he won the MVP. And it's very rare that you're going to have a guy that's going to win the MVP in back-to-back seasons. That said, and again, to me, When I talk about pro sports, at the end of the day, did you win or did you not win first and foremost? Then I will look at numbers in terms of making the determination. Well, I gave you some of Josh Allen's numbers, and to be fair, I want to give you all of Josh Allen's numbers right now. We know the Buffalo Bills have had a tremendous season, and we know that the Buffalo Bills are 13-4 on the season. So we know that the Bills have had a tremendous season, wrapped up, you know, the AFC East a long time ago. So you got to give the Bills, and a lot of that is because of Josh Allen and what Josh Allen has been able to accomplish. And if you look at the numbers, as I mentioned before, 3,731 yards, 28 touchdowns to just 6 interceptions. He's got a rating of 101.4, which is absolutely tremendous. Now, I'm going to look at the Ravens. The Ravens have won 5 straight ball games. Now, some may look at the schedule and say, well, you didn't play the greatest of teams down the stretch. Okay, I mean, you know, certainly that's fine. And I'll give credence, to that, because maybe the Ravens didn't play the greatest teams down the stretch. I mean, beating the Browns, you know, on Saturday, I mean, that's not a great win. Did beat the Texans. This is not a great season for the Texans, but the Texans are in the playoffs, so that's a good win. The Steelers, not playing good football, have won, lost 4 straight games, I believe. But the Steelers are in the playoffs. The Giants, okay, not the greatest of wins, okay, because the Giants are not a good football team right now, okay, and then lost to the Eagles. But look at the games before that. The Chargers, that was a good win, okay, because the Chargers are in the playoffs. The Bengals, that's a division game, right? And even though the Ravens had to go toe-to-toe and the Bengals aren't in the playoffs, that was a division game. Smoked the Broncos. The Broncos are in the playoffs. Beat the Buccaneers. So the Ravens have won some games this year. Okay, so it's not just about the games maybe that the Bills have won compared to some of the games that the Ravens have won. But I would also offer this, and I'm going to take a look. We're going to take a look now at the numbers for Lamar Jackson, because his numbers are really, really good, okay? 41 touchdown passes to just 4 interceptions, 4,172 yards. He's got a 119.6 passer rating, and he's also rushed for over 900 yards this year. He was the first quarterback to pass for over 4,000 and rush for over 900 in a season. And the other thing, the Ravens beat the Bills head-to-head, and it wasn't even close. It was 35-10, I think, in that game. Jackson had like 2 touchdowns. It wasn't like overwhelming numbers, and the numbers against the Browns weren't overwhelming numbers. Like, I think if you said, okay, if the thought process was coming into the last game of the regular season, and you're saying that Josh Allen is the leader and Lamar Jackson would have had to have an incredible game to take over Josh Allen as the leader, well, that didn't happen. It wasn't an incredible game. But I believe that when you look at the totality of the season, that it definitely belongs, I think the award belongs to Lamar Jackson. And we'll see. I don't think he's going to get it, because I think, you know, I mean, Josh Allen has had some really, really good seasons. Maybe he's had some seasons where he should have been more in the running for the MVP award, okay? At the end of the day, however, I think that the narrative was written about midway through the season that Josh Allen was the front runner for the MVP. And he's done nothing since that to make us think that he should not be the MVP. But I think at the same time, where things stood, the Ravens weren't playing good football. I think that was part of the issue. And so Josh Allen and the Bills were playing some really, really good football. So the narrative swung towards Josh Allen, even though, because again, the way we are today, I think we look at numbers. I think the numbers are more of the determining factor of whether or not somebody's an MVP or whether or not somebody should be in the Hall of Fame or whatever the case may be, more so opposed to the maybe the eye test. Okay, that's sort of where we are. And so when you look at it, you know, sort of from that perspective, it definitely should have favored maybe it should have favored Josh Allen. I just think from a team perspective, the Ravens just weren't playing good football. But now we've seen the and look, I can point to two plays in particular that makes me say that in addition to what I've seen with my eyes throughout the course of the season, two plays in particular. Let me take you back to Christmas. The game against the Texans where Lamar Jackson scrambles around, makes a bunch of guys miss, finds a receiver in the end zone after like 12 seconds of scrambling. He did the same thing in that victory over the Bengals going back to about midway through the season. And it's just those types of things. He can do the types of things that other quarterbacks just can't do. And by the way, Josh Allen is a phenomenal running quarterback. Okay, in terms of, okay, if you give him the football, you call it a couple of design plays for him, as the Buffalo Bills have done over the last several years, plays where he's going to, you know, plow right up the middle. He's not going to do a lot of juking and all, not necessarily, but he's just going to run you. You got to get him on the ground. That's a big dude to try to get on the ground. I just think that what I've seen with my eyes and the numbers back it up say to me, that Lamar Jackson should be the league MVP. Give me your thoughts. Hit me up on X at BoxToRow, BoxToRow. We got plenty more of the program to come. We're going to talk some college football playoff today here on the program. We're going to talk some NBA on the program. And still to come, Alabama State head men's basketball coach Tony Madlock. Keep it locked.
More of Box to Row with Donald Ware is on the way.
If you have diabetes, listen up. If you have insurance, you can qualify for a continuous glucose monitor. With a CGM, you can continuously track your levels and trends and spend more time in range, significantly lowering your A1C. More importantly, a CGM eliminates the one thing most people with diabetes hate, painful finger sticks. Order your new continuous glucose monitor today. If you use insulin and if you've seen your diabetes care provider within the last 6 months, you may qualify for your own CGM right now. We'll do all the insurance paperwork and deliver your new CGM at little or no out-of-pocket cost to you. Medicare and most insurances will cover your CGM, so don't wait. Have your insurance handy and call the Aptiva Medical CGM Health Hotline right now.
800-946-6813. 800-946-6813. 800-946-6813. That's 800-946-6813.
BoxToRow.com is the website for all of your HBCU sports needs.
From the Game of the Week feature to interviews
to the latest news in the world of HBCU sports, BoxToRow.com has you covered.
Missed a week of From the Press Box to Press Row?
BoxToRow.com has all the archive shows. Don't forget to check out the All-American teams and weekly media coaches' bowls.
From the Press Box to Press Row
and BoxToRow.com, your HBCU sports leader.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
Box to
Box
Row.
Box to Row.
Box to Row.
Still to come here on Box to Row, Alabama State head men's basketball coach Tony Madlock going to join us on the program. the HBCU National Players of the Week. First up for the Howard Bison guard, Blake Harper. He's a freshman from Washington, D.C., averaged 25 points per game, 6 rebounds, shot 59% from the field, 63% from three-point range, and 100% from the free throw line in two games, for the Bison last week. And this young man is one of the leading scorers. He's a top 10 scorer amongst freshmen in all of Division I basketball, and he is from Washington, D.C. On the lady side, Alabama State's Cordasia Harris, the other player, she's a 6'1 graduate student from Hainesville, Alabama. She averaged 23.5 points, 14.5 rebounds, 3 steals, shot 74% from the field in 2 victories for the Hornets on last week. So, Cordasia Harris of Alabama State and Blake Harper of Howard, the HBCU National Players of the Week. For more information on both Cordasia and Blake, you can visit our website at BoxToRow.com. So you've got the wild card games this weekend, some interesting games. As a matter of fact, looking very much forward to going to Tampa. Going to be in Tampa on Sunday for the game, the Commanders game against the Buccaneers. And this is a rematch, the second game, maybe a revenge game of sorts for the Commanders, who fell to the Buccaneers, who've had a really, really good season this year. Very happy, I got to say, for Mike Evans. And that was a classy move that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did in terms of getting one more possession for the Buccaneers, for Mike Evans. Threw a pass to him. He needed like 3 yards or something like that to go over 1,000 for his first 11 seasons. The only other player in NFL history to do that was Jerry Rice, and we know how great Jerry Rice was. Mike Evans, I mean, he just goes out and puts in the work. When we talk about great players in the National Football League, or great receivers specifically in the National Football League, over the years, very rarely do we talk about Mike Evans. Now, of course, going back a couple of years ago, Super Bowl champion Buccaneers, you know, when Tom Brady was the quarterback, we talked a lot about Mike Evans. But even on that team, we talked about other guys. So you're talking about a guy, 11 straight seasons of 1,000 yards or more receiving. It is absolutely tremendous. And look, on the other side, right, for the Commanders, when we talk about great receivers in the National Football League, we rarely talk about Terry McLaurin. 5 straight years of 1,000 yards receiving for McLaurin. This year he's got, 13 touchdown receptions? That's a franchise, that's a record in terms of the most all-time in Redskins Commanders history, right? And even in his first season, he had like 920 yards receiving. So this is a guy that, since he's come into the National Football League out of Ohio State, that has also gotten it done. Well, I'm looking forward to this game because I look at Tampa Bay, I look at Baker Mayfield. He's playing absolutely unbelievable. I think, you know, you look at the running game, you look at the passing game. What Baker Mayfield is doing, I don't know that I thought that he would ever be on this level again. Remember, it went badly in Cleveland. Not that it went real bad. It's just that, remember, Cleveland decided to go with Deshaun Watson. I bet you Cleveland wants that back. Gave Watson a guaranteed contract. Okay, basically got rid of Baker Mayfield. He bounced around to a couple of places, landed in Tampa, and boy, he's had an absolutely tremendous season. And a lot of the reason why the Buccaneers are where they are is because of Baker Mayfield. And I think Baker Mayfield has made some changes amongst himself. I think he's humbled himself a little bit. He seemed to be, to me, a little bit cocky, especially in the beginning with the Browns. He was humbled a little bit. Now he's humbled, and now you can see his demeanor. He talks differently. He's not as brash. It's good to be confident, but he's not as brash. Not that being brash is a bad thing, but he's toned it down a little bit. And so a lot of the success, or most of the success, especially offensively, is because of Baker Mayfield and the defense under Todd Bowles. You know Todd Bowles is going to come with the great defensive schemes. You're talking about back-to-back NFC South championships for the Buccaneers. Now, got to go up against a formidable Commanders team. You know, I look at the Commanders defensively. The secondary is not good. The linebacker play is pretty good, actually. And the guys up front aren't bad. It just seems like sometimes the Commanders as a whole, but even with respect to the defense, it takes a while. Like it's almost like the Commanders need adversity to be able to then come and play. You saw it against the Cowboys last week and was able to pull that out with Marcus Mariota finishing the second half, putting Jaden Daniels on the bench basically to rest him to get ready for the playoffs, because even if it meant that the Commanders would get the number 7 seed, which it wouldn't have mattered anyway because the Bears came back to beat the Packers, so the Commanders would have had the 6 seed anyway, the Commanders, I think, made the right choice. But again, getting down to the Cowboys, it's been a down year for the Cowboys. Getting ready to lose 2 games in a season to the Cowboys, which would have been definitely unacceptable, even though the Commanders made the playoffs. I mean, I would, you know, not to compare pro to college, but if you wanted to make a reference, right, you could reference sort of Ohio State, and you say, okay, well, Ohio State lost to Michigan, but there's a bigger thing going on in terms of being in the college football playoff and playing for the national championship. Well, it's a similar dynamic. You don't want to lose to your rival twice in a season, but they're bigger fish to fry, right? But again, the Commanders able to kill 2 birds with 1 stone, beating the Cowboys and keeping the number 6 seed on their own merits. So it's something to be said for that. But you look at adversity against the Eagles, right? You look at adversity having to hold on to defeat the Saints. So it's like after getting off to what, the 19-0 lead or whatever the lead was. So it's like the Commanders have to have some kind of adversity to play well. I think that the Commanders, in terms of stopping the run, pretty solid at that. The pass defense, however, is very, very bad. And then offensively, the line is not very good. Your receiving core, I think, you know, Terry McLaurin is good. I think Deami Brown can do some things. He can stretch the field. But the real dynamic there is Zach Ertz, the tight end. You look at the season he's had, his career being resurrected in a lot of respects. I think the play calling has been really, really good for the Commanders so far. It's been good. I mean, like, it's been really, really good in terms of, you know, what Cliff Kingsbury has been able to dial up. But really, the key to the Commanders this year has really been Jaden Daniels. It's really been Daniels and some of the things that he's been able to do, why this team is in the position that it's in. And so I think it's going to be a very, very tough battle for both teams there in Tampa, but should be a good football game, and I'm very much looking forward to that game. You know, the Chargers and the Texans just have not looked good down the stretch. It's almost like the Texans win the AFC South by default because the Jaguars are so bad. The Colts had sort of an up-and-down season. And you look at what the Texans were able to do, I, for whatever reason, I mean, I don't want to call it a sophomore jinx per se, but C.J. Stroud, and yeah, maybe there have been some injuries, certainly, but C.J. Stroud didn't have nearly the season that he had certainly on last year. And meanwhile, I look at the Chargers, I look at what Jim Harbaugh has been able to, he's made all the difference, you know, certainly in the world, I think, for that football team. And I also look at the fact that, I mean, the Chargers just are just good all the way around, no doubt about it. But when you look at the quarterback playing, look at what Justin Herbert has been able to do. It's been pretty good. So that should be an interesting football game. And I definitely like the Chargers on the road. The Steelers and the Ravens, the Steelers are going into this thing backdooring it. Losers of their last five football games where the Ravens are hot. I definitely like the Ravens in that game. Bills and Broncos. The Broncos have had a tremendous season, but the Bills are on a mission. And I think this year that it's a ripe opportunity for the Chiefs to be upset. And I think, you know, we could see the Bills and the Ravens advancing. I don't know if they could both advance to that AFC Championship game. The Packers and the Eagles. The Packers got some issues, certainly with Chris Watson being out, the wide receiver. I know that Jordan Love got banged up a little bit on last week, so that should be interesting. But, I mean, forget about that. The Eagles are, I think, the team you don't want to play, especially with Jalen Hurts coming back. And then the last game, the Vikings and the Rams, yet to be determined whether the game is going to be played in L.A. or in Arizona. But the Vikings got taken to the woodshed last week against the Lions, but I think the Vikings are able to bounce back. I'm not a true believer in the Rams necessarily. Your thoughts, hit me up via Twitter or X at BoxToRow. Up next here on the program, we're talking with Alabama State head men's basketball coach Tony Madlock.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
Here with Stephen Curry, your progress from Davidson to now with Golden State.
Where I've come from in high school into a small D1 college at Davidson, and it's a great story, and I'm just having fun, you know, living my dream and riding the ride.
Main event, Jey Uso joining us here. Could there be a possible return to the bloodline?
For me?
Yes. At some point.
I'm gone, D. Hey, I threw the deuces up before. I'll do it again, man.
Come on, main event. That's family, man. I mean, I'm not talking about now. I get it. But down the line, like, come on.
Hey, D, you see how they be treating me, man? Come on, man. That something, it be your own family sometimes be doing you wrong, Lou. I gotta go, man. Hey, I'm doing all right by myself.
She's Simone Biles.
Actually really fun, like, to be honest. Had a lot of fun. We were like, oh, of course, like, we're in the best shape of our life. We're feeling confident about our body, and we hope that other young girls and women, like, feel that being strong is still beautiful.
The one and only Michael Strahan, and cannot have you on without talking about Texas Southern. Cannot. So how did you ultimately end up at Texas Southern?
Yeah, from Houston. Grew up in Germany. When I was a senior in high school, my dad said, I'm going to send you to stay with your uncle in Houston and get a football scholarship. So I went to Houston. I played at Westbury High School for 1 year. Texas Southern was probably the only school that saw me play, being right there in Houston and being a local boy. And Coach Walter Highsmith, I went over to see him, and he offered me a scholarship. It was perfect for me, man, to go to the HBCU, to go to Texas Southern. The size of the school, the education they gave me, not just in the classroom, but about life. I would have been swallowed up at another school. I wouldn't have felt as if I really could have made a difference or had a real purpose of being there. But at Texas Southern, I always felt like I could make a difference and I had a purpose.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Skylar Diggins of the WNBA. Thank you for having me. I'm excited. You know, just been able to work a lot on my body and my shape, and a lot of things that I feel like I needed to work on in the offseason. Was able to get that done, and, you know, it's showing.
Snoop Dogg is on the mic. Pay attention.
I appreciate the love that I get, and I appreciate the sport of hip-hop, and it's giving me back that same love in return, you know, for the amount of years that I've been doing it. I've always went into it with the same, you know, spirit of I make music for the people. I make it go for them, and I always make them a part of it. And I never separated myself and tried to be a star. I've always wanted to be one of the people that you can look to as somebody that was, you know, like your uncle because of the way that I treat people. And I feel like my career is representative of that. That's why the longevity is there. That's why the love is there. And that's why I maintain the status of, you know, being relevant for so many years.
I'm talking about none other than Serena Williams.
That was definitely one of the better matches I've ever played. I've had it just like that. You know, I was really focused, just really, you know, excited.
Demetrius Flannery, a.k.a. Lil Meach.
In Atlanta, told me that he was going to move me from my hometown, Miami, to L.A., put me in acting classes, and I had to go 5 days a week, two times a day. Only had about a year and a half, but once I started, I didn't want to stop, you know, so once in a lifetime opportunity, I didn't want to watch somebody else, you know, get the role of playing my father and me having to watch him on TV. Opportunity passed me by, so I just buckled down and focused, man. Put everything to the side and made sure that my number one thing that I wanted to do was focus on being the best possible actor I can be for the show. And that's how it happened, man.
That is the voice of Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm just, you know, trying to get better every single day. We've been through a lot as a team, and I enjoy playing with a great group of guys. So, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy every moment of it.
That is the voice of Common. You went to Florida A&M.
Oh, FAMU days were some of the best days of my life. I mean, I had so much fun there. It was like invigorating. It was an introduction to a new aspect of culture in the world. I mean, the Southern girls is just incredible. you know, the food was great. The black college experience, you can't beat that.
Kyrie Irving.
Playing at Duke for Coach K. What was that like and how that prepared you for the league now?
Playing 11 games, you know, a lot of people think that's not a big package for you to become a better player, but for me it was. Playing for Coach K, he gave me the keys to the car, and I was driving it in first 8 games, and you know, being a part of something special like that and having a brotherhood built at an institution such as that one is an experience that you never forget.
Ice Cube has been our guest.
Hey man, thanks for letting me talk a little music, movies, and sports. Hey, my favorite three topics.
Hey y'all, it is the EST of WWE, the strongest, the fastest, the roughest, the toughest, the quickest, the greatest, the best on Box to Row. Tune in if you want to catch the best BEST interview ever.
From the Press Box to Press Row is the sports talk show that is the voice and the talk of HBCU sports, with a flair for pro sports talk and entertainment. Check the show out online at BoxToRow.com.
That's Box to Row, real, relevant radio. Let's keep things moving here on Box to Row. We're joined by a gentleman who is in his third season as the head men's basketball coach at Alabama State. The Hornets are 2-0 in conference play, coming off a big win, an exciting win on Monday against Arkansas Pine Bluff. And on Saturday, the Hornets, of course, are going to face off against Jackson State. Tony Matlock is the head men's basketball coach of the Hornets. He joins us here on Box to Row. Happy New Year to you, Coach Matlock. Welcome back to the program.
What's going on, my man? How you doing today?
I am doing great. You know, I cannot complain. All is well. And I got to say, I mean, a good start, all's got to be well for you, at least from a SWAC standpoint, a good start in the SWAC. Let me take you back to that game against Arkansas Pine Bluff, the game winner by C.J. Hines with the score tied at 91 apiece. Your thoughts on that basketball game?
Well, it started, man. We didn't have a very good start to the game. We got down 15 in the first half. And you know how it is, man. And when you're in a game like that and you're at home and you can't make a shot and the other team is making every shot they shoot, and you're just trying to figure out, hey, how can we get this to under 10 going into halftime? That's what our only thoughts. Coming to our couple media timeouts, let's get it under 10. And we made a bucket and we got a stop. They missed the last shot going into halftime and we were down 9. So we get into halftime, we hopefully made a couple adjustments and came out and just played a lot better the second half. And then, of course, you know, make the game-winning play. C.J. Hines got a layup to win the game.
What was the call there? Was it executed the way you wanted to? What was the call there on that game-winning shot?
No, it was actually a broken play. Because what happened was, because you put in a situation as a coach, and I was talking about this with me and my staff, and actually me and T.J. was talking about this after the game, is a lot of times in that situation, it's a tie ball game. It's probably around maybe 12 seconds to go in the game. And as a coach, you always put in, like, do I call a timeout or not? And usually, in my 28 years of experience, it's probably best to let them just go ahead and play. You know what I'm saying? Because now I can see if things are going wrong. Maybe I can get a timeout and kind of correct it and fix it. But usually, kind of like what happened, we come down and we didn't call a timeout. We just say, hey, we're going to take this last shot of the game. You know, so either going to go overtime or we're going to win it, one or the other. And so it was kind of a broken play, and T.J. was about to make a play, and the ball got deflected. He got to C.J., and now it was a bad closeout on him. He's able to get to the basket and go get a layup.
Yeah, and ultimately you guys get the W, and are undefeated, continue to remain undefeated in conference play. Speak to the importance of what does it mean? You're 4-0 at home at the Acadome. You know, can you kind of speak to that? Couple of conference victories, a victory over VUL, and then a victory over also on you against UT Martin going back to December.
Yeah. And that's if you look at it, D, everything is in this league, man. I was just talking to my staff about it. Just think about this. We're going to get ready to play Jackson State on Saturday, okay? They have not played a home game yet. Can you imagine that as a college coach and your first home game is in January? Basically the second week in January. That's tough. But we understand that we have to play a lot of the guaranteed money games in this league. So I've only had before this weekend stand, I had two home games. You know, I had a non-D1 and I had UT Martin. And usually everybody in our league is in the same boat. They may get, you know, 2 to 3 home games, and the rest of them are going to be either on the road or on a neutral site. And so we understand that. So when you have these home games, you got to try to take advantage of them because you're not going to have many of them.
Tony Madlock, in his third season as the head men's basketball coach at Alabama State, joins us here on Box to Row. Speak to how you performed in that that tournament early in the season in Ohio, where you came out 2-1 in that tournament.
Yeah, when you look at putting your schedule together, you try to make sure we understand again what I could talk about with the guarantee games and the money games, that you're gonna try to have some games where, you know, you're playing against kind of like opponents. You know, it's one thing when you got to go play against LSU and you got to go play against Missouri and you got to go play against these high major programs. But when we played in that MTE in Ohio, we opened up, we had Omaha first, which is a really good team, really good team. But they're like us. They're like, it's a like, we call it a like opponent. Then we played Lamar the next game. They're like us. They're a like opponent. And then we played Akron, who's a really good team. So we went into that MTE thinking, hey, let's find a way to get 2 out of 3. You know, let's get 2 out of 3. Hopefully we can be playing great and get all three of them. But we want to walk out of there with 2 out of 3, and that happened. And that just kind of kept us on pace to do what we're trying to do in the non-conference before you get to swag play.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that tournament. Then, of course, the home game against UT Martin. You play in that tournament against Norfolk and Delaware State. So you're playing against some like opponents. But, man, UNLV, LSU, Akron to some degree, Cincinnati, SMU, you know, Missouri, to your point.
Yeah.
Do those games, I mean, how much maybe do those games help you, and do they, when you're talking about coming into conference play and then maybe overall during the season?
Yeah, I think it helps. It helps because you're put in adverse situations. You know, it's going to be times where that you're going to be, you know, down. You could be down 15. You could be down 20. You could be down 30. And then you got to figure out what kind of team do you have. You know, you got to find out what kind of team do you have when you're down these and it's still playing. Are you going to quit? Are you going to have guys that are not going to be competing and playing trying to play at the highest level? Then it could be the other way too. Just like when we were at LSU. At LSU, we're up 10 with 12 minutes to go. And now you got to figure out how can we try to find a way to finish this game off. So it's a lot of different scenarios that goes in with situations that I think can help you during the year.
C.J. Hines, Amar Knox, and then your son, of course, T.J. Maddox, the three leading scorers on this team. Speak to how well they've played collectively this season.
They played well. And the thing about it, you know, you've talked to a lot of coaches, and you know that the biggest thing in college athletics now is college basketball is having returners, having guys that, you know what you want, have an idea of how you want to play. And all three of these guys you're talking about with TJ and CJ started every game last year. And AK, even though he wasn't a starter last year, he played starter minutes. So he was probably my sixth man last year. So these guys know exactly what I want, what I'm trying to get done. And so it's telling right now because they're all three are playing really good. TJ is coming off an injury. So he's not 100%. But CJ and AK are really playing really good right now.
How are you able, can you speak to in today's college basketball to the point, you've been doing this a long time also with NIL, the portal and all of that, how you're able to keep that, the nucleus of that team, not just this team, but generally speaking, how you're able to, you specifically, because you were at South Carolina State before that, how are you able to keep these teams together?
It's tough. It's tough because, again, you know, in our society, it's really changed. You know, when I was coming up and playing and, you know, just early years of coaching, you know, it used to be that you would go somewhere as a player and, you know, you would hope as a freshman, you would go in and maybe I can play a little bit as a freshman. Sophomore, let's get some more minutes. Junior year, I want to be starting. Senior year, I'll be a starter. Well, it doesn't really work like that anymore. You know, now these guys walk in as a freshman and, you know, they expect to start. They expect to play 25 to 30 minutes. And it just usually not going to happen because 9 times out of 10, a freshman is just not ready. They could be really good. They could be really talented. But they're just not going to be ready for all the things that goes in with Division I basketball. And so that's when that transfer portal pops in. Because now you know that everything now is, if it's not working, I'm leaving. You know, I'm leaving. I'm transferring. And you just look at high schools. Now you look at how many kids now go from 3 or 4 different high schools in a 4-year period. You're talking about an AAU. Like you may see a kid in April on one team. You look at him next time in June, he's on another team. Look at it in July, he's on another team. Because that's just how society is now. So that transfer portal has done a whole lot to college athletics, to men's basketball. I know for sure. Is that, you know, the kids now are not patient enough to, hey, wait my turn, let me continue to get better.
Yeah, I mean, have you, over these 3 years in particular, had to really use that transfer portal?
Oh, yeah, I've had to use it. I've just used the transfer portal, you know, and it's a trickle-down effect now because every coach now wants to get older. You know, it's a trickle-down effect. So now, the last couple of years, you're not recruiting the high school kids that you would have recruited 3 or 4 or 5 years ago because you think that you have to be older because you can't win. If I go and recruit, you know, 5 really good freshmen and everybody else in the league goes and gets 2 junior college kids and 3 transfers, they're just going to be older. They're probably going to be better because my guys are not going to be ready yet. So you have to get in that transfer portal. You have to, you know, go that junior college route in order to try to keep up.
That the voice, of course, of Tony Madlock, the head men's basketball coach at Alabama State, who joins us here on the program for a couple of more moments. I want to ask about Jackson State, but a number that I saw related to your team that I find very interesting. 190 assists to 142 turnovers. Very rare in college basketball that you have a team that has a positive assist to turnover ratio, let alone, I mean, we're talking about 48 more assists than turnovers. Why is that? Like what is that the message you're preaching? But why is it? Why is that?
Yeah, that's one of our goals. So, you know, before every game and for, you know, you have goals and our goal is 12 or less turnovers per game. And because we try to play fast, so playing fast, if you can keep it under 12, you got a chance because basically that you're not giving away possessions. That means we're getting shots up, and the more you can just to do the numbers, the more shots you get up, the more chance you got to make a shot. So we're trying to make sure that we 12 or less turnovers games, and we've done a really good job. Let me knock on some wood here before we go play on Saturdays. That, you know, usually we don't turn the ball over. And part of it is because you talk about the 3 guards, TJ, CJ, and AK, all of them are really combo guards. But they're combo guards that all of them play point guard or have played point guard at times in their careers. So basically we got at all times, for the most part, I got 3 point guards on the floor.
Interesting. 8 of your players, I guess as you know, but just for the audience to know, 8 of your players are either at or above the mark in terms of assist to turnover ratio. Absolutely outstanding. Jackson State, thoughts? You know, you got to go back on the road. Jackson State, the first opponent. Your thoughts on the Tigers?
Oh, it's going to be tough. First of all, I think that Coach Mo has done a great job there. I think they're one of the more talented teams in the league. Again, their record is not going to indicate that just because of, you know, again, they've only played 1 swag game and they're 1-0 in league play. They played 13 bye games. So this is going to be their first home game. Their students are back on campus this weekend. I think they start classes on Monday, just like we do. So it's going to be a great environment for SWAC play, man. We're excited about it, but they're a really good team and looking forward to Saturday.
TJ Madlock, again, he is in his third season as the head men's basketball coach at Alabama State. The Hornets are 2-0 on the SWAC, or in the SWAC on the season, again, on the road on Saturday in Jackson, taking on Jackson State. Coach Madlock, as always, appreciate the time. Continued success to you and the Hornets.
Thank you very much, man. Appreciate you having me on.
You can react to anything that Tony Madlock had to say on X at BoxToRow, BoxToRow. I think the SWAC is wide open for this season. Up next here on BoxToRow, we're talking college football playoff. Keep it locked.
Find the BoxToRow YouTube page for conversations with stars like Omari Hardwick, Brandy, Michael Strahan, and with some of our favorite sports guests over the years. BoxToRow. BoxToRow. BoxToRow.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
Brandon Godrington of the Buffalo Bills. Do you have a chip on your shoulder? Were you disappointed in not being drafted into the National Football League this past draft?
Definitely. I would say I've had a chip on my shoulder since I got into college. Led the state in returns my senior year. Didn't have any offers. I walked on to Central. I was All-American like, 3 out of my 4 years at Central. So, you know, I was definitely expecting it. If not drafted, definitely signed right after the draft. You know, I came in, minicamp invite with the Jets. Blessed enough to get signed down there at minicamp. But, yeah, definitely had a chip on my shoulder, definitely.
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
It's Donald Ware, From the Press Box to Press Row.
Let's talk some college football playoff here on Box to Row. Wherever you may be, and look, again, we are praying for those in the Los Angeles area who are experiencing those fires. It is unbelievable. I mean, I continuously watch some of the news coverage, and it is unbelievable. And by the way, they've moved that Rams-Vikings game to Arizona, as a matter of fact, in light of these wildfires. But praying for those that are affected by those wildfires. And then in the southeast here, I mean, earlier in the week, I know in the like the Washington area, maybe going northeast, there was some snow. We're experiencing some weather here in the southeast. We're here, of course, in the Raleigh area, but experiencing some weather here. So hope that wherever you are, you're safe, you're warm, and thank you for making Box to Row a part of your day. I want to talk specifically, because I had a chance, I really sat down and watched that Penn State and Notre Dame football game, and I thought this would be more of a defensive struggle because when I look at both of these defenses, in particular Notre Dame's defense, like I think Notre Dame has the kind of defense that can win a national championship. Now, you can look at, you know, the 24 points that Penn State scored and say, well, that's a lot of points to give up. Yes, it's a lot of points to give up. And I would also add that Penn State rushed for a bunch of yards. Penn State went for in excess of 200 yards. But in the passing game, Penn State, Notre Dame shut Penn State down. Penn State was really unable for a majority of the football game to really use its wide receivers. Like it had to mainly use its tight ends. And by the way, Penn State has a phenomenal, an absolutely phenomenal tight end, one of the best in the country, in Tyler Warren, who has been really good for Penn State throughout the season and in these playoffs, right? So, you know, Penn State, but Penn State only completed 12 passes in 23 attempts for 135 yards. Okay, that you got to give a lot of credit, and was forced to put the football on the ground, meaning to run the football. 214 yards rushing on 42 attempts. Had to carry the football for, really 204 yards rushing on 42 attempts. Now, that's really good. That's in excess of 4 yards, more like 4.5 yards per carry by Penn State. So it was able to establish the run, able to establish time of possession. But in the end, it was really the mistakes that were made down the stretch. You look at the interceptions. Again, I mentioned the 12 of 23 by Drew Aller, okay? But that one interception late in the game was absolutely huge. Meanwhile, I mean, Penn State wasn't shabby on defense either. I thought Abdul Carter absolutely, especially in the first half, he was a game wrecker. Now, I looked at his numbers. You know, when you look at his numbers to end the game, I mean, I thought, you know, he had better numbers than he ultimately had. As I looked at the numbers, only five tackles, two of those tackles for loss with a sack. But if you looked at the game in terms of the havoc that he was wreaking, the pressure that he was putting, you know, on Notre Dame, in particular in the pass game, because I thought he put a lot of pressure on in the run game as well. But the pressure, you know, certainly that he was putting on Riley Leonard, especially in the first half. If you look at Notre Dame, okay, and you look at Notre Dame's numbers in the first half in terms of possessions, right? Only Notre Dame only had three possessions in the first half. Just three possessions. That's it that Notre Dame had. Well, four possessions, as it were. Four possessions in the first half, and only held the ball for about 7 minutes or so in that first half. That's it for Notre Dame. One field goal. That's it. But hung around enough. The defense did enough to kind of hang around, because I thought what was even more important, if you look at the reverse side of that, seven possessions for Notre Dame in the second half, four scores, including three touchdowns. And I would also add, after the field goal that Notre Dame got late in the first half, the next possession for Notre Dame was a touchdown. So you're talking about scoring on back-to-back possessions to tie the game. That was sort of the game changer. And I'm going to tell you this, the Jeremiah Love touchdown run was really, really big, because remember, he was injured coming into this football game. He had he averaged over 4 yards per carry. He had a solid game, but he was injured. But the effort in which he was able to get that touchdown, he was stopped, you know, dead to rights, and continued to fight, and then dove at the end, even with the knee situation, okay, and able to get that touchdown. You know, that was absolutely huge. Penn State fought back. Give Penn State a lot of credit. But that interception late over the middle was huge. It enabled Notre Dame to come down, kick the field goal with, what, less than 10 seconds remaining, and win that football game. It was a hard-fought football game. It was a really, really good football game. And by the way, in that football game, when you look at Marcus Freeman, James Franklin, I mean, you're talking about two black head coaches. I talked a lot about that on this program, the lack of black head coaches at the FBS level. Well, now you're going to have a black head coach playing for the national championship in Marcus Freeman. Now, a little more than 2 years ago, Marcus Freeman came on this program, okay, his first year at Notre Dame, and I asked him what it meant to him, or what it means to him, to be the head football coach at Notre Dame and the second black head football coach in Notre Dame history.
Well, it's an unbelievable opportunity. I'm humbled and honored to be a head coach at Notre Dame, and let alone the second black head coach here. You know, I remind myself that I am a representation for a lot of our players. I hope that our players can look at me and say, you know what, I can do anything I want. I don't care how I look. We have a lot of black players on our team as well as white, but I hope they all can look at me and say, you know what, you don't have to look a certain way to become a leader or become in a position of leadership or become a head football coach. Anybody can do it because I'm no different than them. And as I told them, I was raised like a lot of them. I lived a similar life path to a lot of them. And you know what? I have to remind myself that I'm a representation. I got to do a good job. I got to make sure that because of the effort I put in, because of the intentionality of our work, that somebody else that might look like me will get this opportunity.
Marcus Freeman, I think about 4 years as the defensive coordinator at Notre Dame, coaches in the bowl game in 2021, loses that bowl game, gets the opportunity to be the head coach, 9-4 in his first season, 10-3 in 2023, and then remember the loss to open the season to Northern Iowa, which nobody thought Notre Dame could bounce back from that. And that's exactly what Notre Dame was able to do, bounce back. And now Notre Dame will be in the national championship game. And what does this mean now for Penn State? You know, James Franklin has led this program for many, many years. This is a program that has been on has been in position to be in the college football playoff for a couple of seasons, couldn't get it done. Now you have this playoff scenario, makes a nice run, but will Penn State be able to get back to this point on next year? I think that is a huge, huge question mark, and I don't know. The Big Ten is wide open. Will Indiana have the success that Indiana had, you know, this year? Will it have it next year? I mean, there's so many question marks, I think, really, for this Penn State program. But I think Penn State's going to be able to bounce back from this. James Franklin has built a good program, and so we'll see what happens moving forward. But the national championship game should really, really be a good one, and so looking forward to that. In the couple of moments that we have remaining here on Box to Row, and thank you for making Box to Row a part of your day. I want to get back to some National Football League talk. You know, we talked a little bit about Commanders and the Buccaneers game. You know, you've got some pretty good games here for this weekend. And, you know, I would have to say my Super Bowl favorites right now. And look, coming into this season, when we first started, I said I thought that Sam Darnold, under the tutelage of Kevin O'Connell, I thought the Vikings would be good. I didn't know if Detroit could get back to, could take the next step. In other words, get to the Super Bowl. I knew Detroit was going to be good, good roster. I think what Detroit has been able to overcome, right, in light of all of these injuries, especially on the defensive side of the football, speaks volumes. And you know, Brad Holmes, we've had Brad Holmes on this program. He's done a phenomenal job in terms of building this program, building the Lions up to where the Lions are. And I could be wrong. The Lions may, in fact, get over, you know, take that next step and get to the Super Bowl. We'll see. I think they would have to be my favorite right now, along with the Ravens. I think Kansas City, number one seed, I get it, doesn't have to play this week. I think Kansas City is vulnerable this year. And so for me, I think the Ravens and the Lions will be the matchup that we'll see in the Super Bowl. And by the way, after 15 years, Box to Row will be back at the Super Bowl. We'll be there the week of. We're looking forward to that. In the coming weeks, we'll have more information on that. Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to Tony Matlock, the head men's basketball coach at Alabama State, for joining us today here on the program. For more information on Box to Row, visit our website, boxtorow.com. And always remember to support those that support Yo, Box to Row is produced by DW Communications.
get what you need, y'all. You got to give a lot just to get what you need sometimes.